Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which this podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and to Aboriginal elders emerging. The following podcast contains content of a graphic, violent nature and is not suitable for children.
Hi guys, my name's Hannah and my sister Emma Jade Pawelski was murdered when I was 15 years old. I've recently just turned 30. Her life was taken at the same age that I am now. My mum posted a Facebook post this afternoon in the cold case group regarding Emma's information. It sort of triggered something for me and I've decided to speak publicly and talk about the impacts that these scumbags will have on the whole family and the whole community of people that have suffered loss like this. A friend called me and said to me, like, wow, I had no idea, like, this is your sister. I remember that day. I remember seeing it on the news. Like, I had no idea this was you, you know, and I've just basically sat on the phone crying to him for 10 minutes because it brings back so much trauma and traumatic memories of seeing and picturing a beautiful woman laying in a forest, burnt, and just laying there for dead. And my mother, I respect my mother immensely. She carried this child in her body for 9 months. She raised her as a single parent. And to then find out that they are laying in a forest dead, that pain is unimaginable. I'm not a mother and I can even feel her pain. You know, these scumbags, they need to not be able to get away with this. And people need to be aware that you just can't go and do that stuff. We try to remember all the good things about her and all her good memories and the beautiful things that, yeah, we remember about her. But then we're always haunted by this cold case and, you know, what if it doesn't get solved? What if, you know, we die and we're never going to get the answers and we deserve to know? You become sort of numb to it sometimes because you're just so used to it and life goes on, but you have your moments where you're just like, I need to know, I need justice, and we're not going to give up. And, you know, hopefully our day comes, but I would like people to understand the impact of crime in general. It just impacts everyone involved that are close to that person. Thank you. If you've listened this far, thank you.
That's Hannah from Adelaide making a rare appearance on the Facebook page she runs with her mother called Please Help Solve the Murder of Emma Jade Pawelski. There's a link in our show notes and on our Facebook page. In today's episode, we hear from Hannah and Emma's mum, Sharon McKell. We often meet great people because of this podcast who we wish we could have met under different circumstances, and none more so than Sharon. As you'll hear, she's a gorgeous woman from Adelaide who makes friends wherever she goes and keeps them forever. She's the kind of person who'd do anything for anyone, which is no doubt why she finds it so incredible that there are people in Adelaide who know what happened to her daughter, Emma. They know who did it and why, but they won't come forward and tell police. If you have any information about the death of Emma Jade Pawelski, you can call Crime Stoppers anonymously on 1-800-333-000.
This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb. Come with us as we go beyond the news cycle to find out how people become killers, how people become victims, and what happens next.
We start this episode by getting to know Sharon a little bit and hearing about her life as a young mum with Emma.
I help run the homicide victim support group here in Adelaide. We haven't had any meetings for a few months because of COVID, but we are all going out to dinner tomorrow night, just meeting at a hotel. And other hotels have nearly gone back to normal here in Adelaide. We've had a cold case last week, a family that I've got to know very well. Yeah, so their mum's case of 22 years got an arrest made last Thursday. I went to court with them on Friday just to support them. I mean, it was 1 minute hearing just to formally charge him with their mother's murder. So when I hear that, I get more hope about Emma. And I never thought that Emma's case would just be so difficult to solve. I thought it was a straightforward case, but it hasn't turned out that way.
Yeah. How many years now have you been waiting?
It will be 15 at the end of November. She died on the 26th of November. Well, that's when she went missing. But when they found her body in the forest up at Mount Crawford, they estimated she'd been there about 8 days. And that made sense because no one saw her after the morning of the 26th of November. And she was found on the Sunday the following week.
Were you a single mum?
I was with her when she was, like, so I had her at 19. Look, I had a fling. Her dad lives in Melbourne. We had a one-week fling. You know what young kids do. He came to Melbourne. He's from Adelaide originally, and he came to visit family. And I used to share a house with his sister, and I remember saying to her once, oh, because I thought he was absolutely gorgeous. I just had this fling with him and I got pregnant, but he was already living with a woman in Melbourne with had his own child with her. So I never really told him I was pregnant with Emma until he came back to Adelaide when Emma was about 18 months old to visit family again. And his sister said, I think you should go and visit Sharon. She's got your child. And he was like, what? But I just hadn't told him.
That's amazing.
I didn't want to tell him because I didn't want to interfere with his life in Melbourne because it was just a stupid thing that I did at 18, you know.
Oh, I don't know. It's just a really independent thing that you did.
Well, I didn't. I knew he had a partner and I shouldn't have done what I did, but anyway.
Because the photo of the three of you, you and your two girls, I mean, you're just so stunning, all three of you, and I thought you were very young. It's such a beautiful.
Which photo is that? Was that on my page recently?
Yeah, well, yeah, it looks like it's a beautiful portrait.
That's just like a school photo. It was taken at her. She was in, you know, grade one or two. And we just went to the school where they had a family photo taken. Yeah, so Emma would have been about 20, then 21. She had really long hair, but she used to wear a fringe really short and she had it tied back in a plait down her back. So it looks like she's got really short hair, but her hair was actually very long. And I've got a bit of a mullet, I think.
You look very fashionable. It's beautiful. Red hair. And you just, the three of you just look gorgeous in this photo.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you definitely look very young and fashionable. And I thought, God, what a spunky mum.
I'm 64 now. I can't believe it. So Emma died a week after my 50th birthday, which, you know, not that yeah, it's my birthday, it's no big deal, but it was just not, you know, November used to be a great month and now, no, I mean, it's just an anniversary, but it's just, you know, it's hard because of what's happened, as you can imagine, because you talk to people from families that this happens to all the time. So there's 15 years between Hannah and Emma, and they've got different fathers, of course. I did marry Hannah's dad. He's an old, he was my boyfriend in primary school.
Oh.
We went to different high schools, bumped into him when I was 31 or something at a Van Morrison concert, and he just had recently divorced, and we sort of somehow just got together again and ended up getting married, and we had Hannah when I was 34.
God, you're fabulous. You're so Adelaide to me. I've got a lot of friends from Adelaide, you see, a lot of comedians. It's a great place, right?
Yeah.
And you're very bohemian Adelaide to me.
Oh, thank you. I was a real hippie when I was younger. I was into TM and all the different goddess stuff and all that, which I'm still interested in, but, yeah, not quite as what I used to be when I was younger, probably because, yeah, just life changes you a little bit.
Did you live alone with Emma when she was a baby?
So basically I was a single mum. We lived together in a house that I shared with friends because it was actually my grandfather's house that he'd gone into a nursing home, and my father didn't want to sell it at that stage. It's sort of inner city, like near North Adelaide, which is inner city Adelaide, close to the city. And I lived like a hippie there with her, and I had a few different girlfriends move in over time. I was writing to music, and a few of my friends moved to Sydney, and I ended up following them with Emma. She was 4 years old. I remember I've got photos of her at Taronga Park Zoo. And so I moved to Sydney for about a year and just lived in a share house with two girlfriends. Then I got homesick, came back to Adelaide, and Emma had to start school, so I thought I'd better settle down. And then I did meet a guy when I went out one night, and I ended up, me and Emma moved in with him in the city. So I was with him for 5 years. That's when I got into radio, when I was living with him. He was a marketing manager for this pizza place, and they had a live show, a radio show on the back of a truck in Adelaide for 5KA. And I just went to that with him one morning because he was supplying all the pizzas that were getting promoted on the breakfast show.
Yes. And I just
found all the radio people I met were really, really interesting. The next week there's an ad in the paper for a studio producer at Radio 5KA, and I was like, I'm going to go for that. And I went for it and I got it.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I feel like you've got a great personality for that job. Yeah.
So the music director and like the big boss of the station interviewed me, and they asked me to tell them a joke, and I ended up telling them the punchline first. So. And I went, oh, my gosh, because I was nervous. And they just laughed. But anyway, I got the job. So I used to get up at 4 a.m. Emma was only young then. She was just started school, and she used to come in the studio with me, and I used to get free tickets to all those, you know, concerts of all the bands that came to Australia. It was good, actually. When Emma did die, all the radio station doesn't exist anymore. It became Triple M. But, everybody was just so devastated because she'd been in the studio on and off for years as a little girl hanging around, you know.
Yeah, and you get to know each other so well, don't you, and each other's kids. And,
yeah.
You know, you share all of their milestones and all that.
I'm still in touch with all those people. I still see a lot of them. We get together and have meals and people's birthdays. So it was a great job. I loved it.
So you're one of those people who collects people. That's what it seems like to me. You keep friends forever.
Yeah, I have. You know, even the cold case murder that was solved last week, the arrest on that one, I went to school with Diane, one of the daughters, and I didn't meet her through the homicide victim support group. I sort of met her at Elizabeth South Primary School reunion that we had a few years ago. And then I remembered her mother had been murdered, and we talked about it, and I talked about Emma, and she said, well, I used to belong to the homicide victim support group, but she just sort of went for the first few years. But she started coming to a few functions that we have again. But I do have friends from school days still, from high school, primary school. Yeah, all my friends I've known forever. Plus I meet lots of new friends, so I'm a people person, yeah.
Let's fast forward then. What was life like around that time when Hannah was about sort of 15 years old? Was Emma still living at home with you guys?
No, I have to explain. I don't know if you're going to put this on the podcast, but Emma had some drug issues.
Babe, that's all right. Didn't we all?
Yep.
That's okay.
Yeah. When she lived with me when I was married to Hannah's dad, mm-hmm. and then she moved out at around 18 and moved in with a couple of girlfriends in a flat and she was working. Then she did a bit of traveling and she came back to Adelaide. She got a old, like a flat in an apartment at a suburb called Burnside, which is quite a trendy suburb in Adelaide. And she got a job in a Video Easy store that was opened, and she had a car and she got this job. In that time, she met up with a guy that she'd done adult reentry school with, because she left school in year 11 and worked at Hungry Jack's for a couple of years and then decided, nah, this is not what I want to do. So she went back to school and got her year 12, and she was right into drama and she topped the school in the drama and English. And yeah, I was really proud of her. But she just, I think when you're a kid and you're earning a bit of money because she had a part-time job, oh, I want to leave school, I just want to work. But then the reality was, she wasn't really going to do it much just working at Hungry Jack's. I think she got bored. So she went back to met this boy. I won't say his name. Anyway, they met up at a nightclub when she was about 21. And unfortunately, he was into the heroin. And before I know it, she was into it too. I had a girlfriend ring me telling me she was really worried about her. And Hannah's dad and I did go turn up at a flat unexpectedly on a Sunday morning just to check out what was happening. This particular guy knew, he saw us coming and he ran out the back door. Anyway, the long and short of it, she had started using. Unfortunately, she was addicted fairly quickly. And she was on that road for a few years after that, trying to get off it and on it and on it. And anyway, she ended up finishing up with this guy, and she came home and lived with me for about 18 months. So she went through rehab and got off heroin totally. I mean, they had to detox her. We had a lot of counselling together as mother and daughter. My dad even went to counselling for family. Yeah, so she tried very hard. She let herself go into this facility, which was run by a lady whose daughter had died of a heroin overdose. And unfortunately, Shea Louise House doesn't exist anymore because their government grant ran out after a few years. It depended who's in government at the time. And they really helped me with Emma. So basically she got off everything. She was doing really well. Went out again to be, you know, by this stage she's like 26 or something, goes, Mum, I need to be independent. So she just went back to share houses and got a job at TAFE. But I think she got an admin job in Adelaide TAFE in the city. But slowly she started mixing with old friends again. No, she never got back into heroin again.
That's good, because, I mean, you would know much better than me. What are the stats about most people go back to rehab how many times before they really never go back again? It's 4 or 6 or something, isn't it? There is a stat about it. Yeah.
Well, she never went back again, but it was the whole process took about a year of counselling and her living with me and I'm having to keep an eye on her. And in that time she met this really nice girl who was a drama teacher where Hannah was doing a little just drama class for a hobby, and Emma and this girl, they just clicked. She's a goth and Emma was a bit of a goth. They were into sort of The Cure and all that, and they had their jet black hair. And Emma got into, when she was living with me, she got involved with this drama group and performed a play and just loved it. And I was just so happy that her life was getting back to normal again, because she's a very outgoing, very bright, just very intelligent girl, but easily led. And did have a few issues about growing up without her father, even though she got to know him as she grew up. And as an adult, she went to Melbourne and visited him a few times. And if he came to Adelaide, he'd visit her. But she didn't have that ongoing relationship that you have with your father that's in your life every day. And I really believe that, I just feel that, you know, she felt there was an issue there with that whole thing with not having a dad. I mean, I really regret it in a way. You have all these regrets as you get older and these things happen. I mean, I loved her immensely, but I was probably very young having a child at the time. You know, she was just went everywhere with me. She was like my little shadow, and I dragged her to, you know, music festivals and people's houses. And
but, I mean, that's, I'm sure everyone says the same thing to you, that every mother is guilty, feels guilty. I feel guilty, and I'm home with my kids all the time, but I'm working all the time. I'm always saying to them, shush, I'm working. And we all have regrets. We all have things that we feel bad about. Yeah. We all have them.
I suppose you can't go back in time and you do what you think's the best. I mean, everyone, all my friends who have known Emma all her life, they said, Sharon, you were a great mother. You did everything with her. You included her in everything. You know, she grew up loving music because she sort of loved it, and I was never into drugs. I was not a drinker. Yeah, my downfall was probably loving to go and see bands a lot and things like that. And, you know, but I had a group of girlfriends when she was younger, and we always used to share the babysitting. So someone always babysat so the rest of us could go out, and then the next thing, it was your turn the next sort of week, you know, weekend.
Yeah. So, well, it doesn't sound like hell to me, but no. I'm sure there's any number of people who've told you this over the years.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Michelle. So where are we up to? Sorry.
So she's back out of the house now.
Yeah, I could just slowly see things. Oh, I don't know. She then met this guy. But long and short of it, he ends up in jail because he stole something out of a policeman's boot, a gun or something, and sold it. So I think they were dabbling in stuff, but she wasn't on heroin. But I think it was probably more, you know, meth. I'm not sure. Now, she hid things from me because she knew it would upset me. She was very good at just leading a bit of a double life, only because she loved, like everyone says, all her girlfriends who've contacted me since she died, people that I didn't even know, or I knew of them but I didn't get, because I wasn't in her life as an adult all the time. She had her own people. I just knew her long-term friends. But people say to me, you know, she just loved you so much and she just never wanted to hurt you. So, you know, there was just things that she just didn't tell you about because she just didn't want to hurt you. So I think basically the last year of her life, she rented a place in the city, right in the city actually, part of an old building. She had like a downstairs two-bedroom flat, and she wasn't working. I know that. Anyway, in that time she met someone through the original boyfriend who she got into heroin with. He brought this particular man around who just got out of jail and had nowhere to go. And he said, oh, Emma will put you up, because Emma used to take in stray cats and everything. So, yeah. Anyway, long and short of it, I didn't like this person. I only met him on her birthday, but there was just something not right about him. And I can't really say much about him, but he's a suspect. But anyway, they ended up moving out of that place because she didn't pay her rent anymore after being there for 2 years and paying rent. I think he was taking a lot of her money because he had her in the end working at escort agency.
Mm-hmm. And when did you find that out?
Oh, probably a few months before she died. Yeah. And the people who owned that place actually turned up at a funeral. I don't know why they came to a funeral. I'd never met them. I didn't need to know them, but they were there, and I'm not sure why they were there, but anyway, they just came to tell me how much they loved her. But I'm just sort of like, I didn't know you from a bar of soap, and I'm just not sure why you, yeah, anyway, I'm not sure about that. She'd left him a couple of days before she died and went to stay with a friend of his, and his daughter, just because she had needed somewhere to go. I wish she'd rung me, but what had happened a few weeks before that, she'd wanted to come and stay with me, and I said she could because she'd lost the house in the city and they were just sort of sleeping at different people's homes. And I told her she could come, but she said, can he come as well? And I just said no. When I met him, I had a terrible negative feeling about him and I just didn't want him at our home. So I had to protect Hannah. She was in year 10 at high school and I just didn't. And I wasn't with Hannah's father anymore by that stage. We had separated. So that was another reason. It was just Hannah and I living together. And my house was always open, because Emma before that used to come and spend weekends with us and things like that. But I just wasn't going to have this man at our house. And she sort of, you're my mum. And I said, yeah, I am your mum, but I'm not his. I said, you can come, but he's not coming. Oh, you don't love me. And he hangs up on me. So that was the last conversation we had about, that was probably early November, and she died 3 weeks later. Yeah. though the day before she died, she'd rung up my dad and said that she'd left the bastard and she was going to ring me the next day because I'd gone to a friend's 50th that night. And she said, tell Mum that I'll ring her tomorrow. And that was the day she went missing. So I never did speak to her again. So she went missing on the 26th of November, 2005. The house where she was staying, she was asked to leave. So she's seen walking along Prospect Road, which is a main road just out of the city, with her cat and a shoulder bag quite early in the morning. Then she was sighted by another man crossing a side street on another main road, which is just off Prospect Road, called Regency Road. And that's the last sighting of her, about 9 o'clock on that Saturday morning. And if you see all, like when Channel 9 have done all cold case stuff on Emma, they've reenacted it. Like they've got a young girl walking down the road holding, because she was holding a cat. She took a cat with her.
Of course she did.
Yeah. So I just wish she'd rung me, but I didn't get a call. When her body was found 8 days later, she'd been bashed to death and she was burnt. And she didn't have any shoes on her feet. But when she was seen walking, somebody said she had boots on. Her cat was never found. Her bag with her phone was never found. And Mount Crawford's about an hour's drive from Adelaide, just into the Adelaide Hills, from the eastern suburbs.
So she was driven there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she was definitely driven there. Yeah, so, yeah, she was found by a guy who was running through the forest with his dog. He lived in the town closest to Mount Crawford Forest there, where that side of it where she was found, is a town called Williamstown. He lived in Williamstown, this particular man, and he just used to run through the forest on a Sunday with his dog. He'd go one way in 1 week and the other way the second week. If he'd gone that way the first week, he would have found her the next day. But he didn't go running that route until the following Sunday. So she, so he found her. So then by that stage, she'd been there 8 days. So, yeah, it's a really, it's been really hard case to solve. I'm not, the police have obviously talked to people, but it's just been hard to know what happened to her after she went missing, her last sighting of her. That Saturday morning.
Mm. Have you had people, though, contacting you and telling you what they think happened?
Yeah. And I pass it on to detectives, but, I mean, they've got a picture of things. It's just, I've had different people give me their opinions of what happened.
But that's not really helpful.
No, it isn't for me. And I say, well, if you really believe that this is very relevant information, can you please ring? I've given the detective's phone number to a few people, and Crime Stoppers still will take any, and it's all confidential. Whatever anyone ever says to anybody, it is confidential. And there is a $200,000 reward for any information that leads to an arrest. And I know if somebody came up with the right information, there's immunity for them too. Even if somebody was the other person that drove the car or whatever up, there'll always be immunity for anyone who gives that information.
Do you remember finding out?
Oh, yes, Michelle. That day was my first day working in a new building in Adelaide. And I left work. It was a warm day, I remember that. It was the 5th of December. And I walked, and she'd been found on the 4th of December. But I caught a bus home. Hannah's high school was near our home where we were living, and she'd come home early and she'd made a salad and was just cooking us a schnitzel each on the stove. And the news that was just about to start, and I was a bit hot from walking from the bus stop. And she said, Mum, sit down. And she gave me a big glass of cold water. And I just sat down as the Channel 9 news started that moment, and it just came on. The headlines was, young woman found in forest. They didn't know who she was, and they started flashing up photos of jewellery.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and it was like, Emma had quite a lot of jewellery, and when I just saw it, my heart sank, because there was a ring that I'd only given her for her birthday in October, this little gold filigree ring with little amber stones in that I'd bought from a little jewellery shop for her in the city when she'd met me for lunch one day, and we picked it out together, and she just wanted a nice little ring for her birthday. And her father in Melbourne had actually sent her this lovely bracelet that he got from Mexico when he'd gone overseas, and he'd posted it to me and asked me to give it to her on her birthday. So that got flashed up on the TV as well.
God.
So my heart sank. Hannah saw it because our lounge room and kitchen was sort of in the same open area, and she was standing at the stove and she saw it on the TV, and we just both our hearts sank at the same time. And I rang Crime Stoppers, said I might be making a mountain out of a molehill, but my daughter has been missing. I haven't been able to contact her for a week. I've been ringing her phone, leaving her texts, and my parents have been ringing. And I just sort of had to do with her lifestyle at the time that she wasn't getting back to me. And then someone from Major Crime rang me straight back after I spoke to the lady at Crime Stoppers, and I explained to them, and they just said, look, we'll be there, we'll be out shortly to your home. And they brought more photos of her jewellery, and I recognised most of the pieces of jewellery that they had photos of, because on the TV I think they flashed up about four things, and then they, in the photos they had earrings, and she had a little gold chain on her ankle and couple of other rings that she wore. She liked jewellery. She was just sort of, used to wear a few bangles and things like that.
After the break, a chance encounter at the local shops leads to an intense confrontation.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
We've had to postpone our live stream event this weekend due to the latest COVID lockdown. It's now scheduled for August 8, but we're holding a Netflix party with our patrons this Saturday night. If you're not a patron yet and you'd like to hang out and watch some true crime with us, you can go to patreon.com/osttruecrimepod. And thank you to these patrons: Switch City King, Sally Colpoise, Jessica Allen, Laura Nicholson, and Casey. Coming up on Australian True Crime, an unimaginable confrontation at the shops. But first, how do you parent one child through the murder of another?
Well, we both went into shock, and so did my parents and close friends. Hannah was okay over the shock initially, but it hit her a couple of years later. Her school grades started going, she was a really, in year 10, she got mainly all A's at the end of the year. And that was just at the end of the year when that happened. But she found going to school hard the next year. The school would ring me and said, we've had to send Hannah home. She's just dissolved in tears today. And they knew what happened, but They just said, we've just sent her home and we're just letting you know.
I mean, I can see she's still very emotional now. You know, the video that she posted on Facebook's very emotional.
Oh, she is. She is. Emma was like her second mum. I think because there's such an age gap. When Hannah was born, Emma just sort of loved her, you know, totally, my little sister, and just having a baby in the house. And even on her first birthday, Emma's holding her while she's got her first birthday cake with family around and I'm taking the photo. And, you know, when she just used to love taking her out in a pram. And just because there was such a big age gap, it was like Emma's baby a little bit.
Plus, you both must have been exhausted by that stage already. Having a drug user in the family is exhausting, right?
We were very worn out. Hannah was a little bit angry with Emma a little bit at times because she felt that sometimes Emma would ring me and I'd just quickly rush out and go to her aid sort of thing. I couldn't help it.
When you've had to tell Emma a week earlier that she can't come home, I mean, that's heartbreaking.
Oh, it was. I wanted her to come and stay with us because she was basically homeless then and staying at people's houses because when she's with this man, the rent stopped getting paid, you know, and she'd paid it on her own for 2 years and then all of a sudden it's not getting paid.
How did you find the process with the detectives? Did you have a good relationship?
I've still got a good relationship with them. One of the detectives that came out that night to my house after I'd seen it on the television, he's still on her case. There is a new detective working on her case, like fresh eyes at the moment. He's just a really lovely, dedicated young detective. He's a bit younger, but he's very dedicated. So, no, I have no complaints about major crime and what they've done. And I've had a lot to do with them being part of the Homicide Victim Support Group because you support other families and we have like a Christmas memorial service and all the major crime detectives come to that. The night that Emma was found, it was the Christmas memorial service that night in a big park next to Adelaide Oval when she got found. And the superintendent in charge of major crime that night was at that memorial service with, it's called a candlelight vigil. And he was there with some other detectives and they got a call to say that a young woman had been found murdered in Mount Crawford. So they all had to leave the service to go up to Mount Crawford. So all the remaining people at that service, they lit a candle for Emma. And then lo and behold, I joined the group a few months later and they told me when they'd found out someone else had got found while the service was on, you know, they... they were all just thinking about another family has to go through this now, you know.
And it was you. Can you tell us what you get from being part of that group, the victim support group?
I get a lot of satisfaction now being able to talk to people. I've come quite a long way from then, from going from shock, grieving, being depressed, all that sort of, you know, you go through all those emotions over time, and to come out the other side and I feel a lot stronger. I'm still very dedicated to this being solved just because I believe that people just can't get away with doing this, taking up someone else's life, and just the impact it has on everyone who loves that person. But I've become a lot stronger, so now I'm able to be in the group, and families that are new to the group because someone has just been murdered recently, I can give them support, talk about your experiences, just understand where they're at because I was there once too. And so I just think, I mean, our group is mainly women. We do have a few men that come, but the majority of people that tend to come to support groups are women. So, you know, you've got that. Women tend to help each other a lot. It's not for everybody. And I had a break from it for a few months. And, I mean, we only meet once a month and you don't have to. People can come and go, but it's always there because we understand as a group what you're going through, what people are going through, and especially in early days. And a lot of people, I haven't got to a trial yet, but I've been to court a couple of times and, you know, just even the whole court process can be so daunting.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, I can't imagine. I think I would find that really frightening. So at least if you have people with you who do know what's going to happen next and that support network, I think I would really appreciate.
Oh, definitely. And look, and I think this is in every state. We have victim contact officers who are, so we have two victim contact officers for homicide here in Adelaide, two women, and they've been great support to me as well. And they're always in court going with the families, you know, for the supporting them because they're there. They work for major crime and they're there. They're the first port of call when, you know, something happens, a murder, a homicide happens in a family. They're with that family from basically day one. Unfortunately, when Emma died, there was no one in the position just at that time. The person who'd been doing the job had gone to another department. So I didn't get that support initially, but I've been getting it from about a year after Emma died, you know, constantly from these women. So that's been good.
Adelaide's a small town. Have you ever seen the person of interest around?
Yes. Confronted him.
Did you?
Very quietly, yes. He denied it all, of course, but he's been in and out of jail.
Mm. But how did that go for you?
It was quite a long time ago, Michelle. It was 3 years after, and he'd been in jail again and had just got out. I just saw him in a shopping centre and just confronted him, but not shouting or anything. I was very quiet. I just went up to him. It was all very sudden. I wasn't expecting to see him, so my heart was thumping, but I just thought, no, I can't let this moment go. And I just walked up to him and said, hello, and his name. I said, hello, with his name. And I lifted up my sunglasses and said, Sharon. This is Sharon, Emma's mum. And he just froze. The look on his face, and he just went, I had nothing to do with it. I had nothing to do with it. And I said, I didn't say you did, but I just would like to know what happened leading up to this. He just was really uncomfortable and hardly said anything to me and was trying to walk away, and I'm just sort of following him but not shouting or anything. But he finally said, I've got to go, and he walked out. Then I just burst into tears because it was sort of all so sudden, and I rang up the detective and said, look, I've just approached him and, you know, I hope I haven't done the wrong thing. But he said, no, that's okay. I mean, I told him what I'd said, and he said, that's okay. But the thing is, I'm never going to give up while I'm alive, because I just, for Emma's sake as well. I mean, of course we want answers, and nothing's going to bring her back. So, you know, I'm even to the point where I just would like to know why it happened. Even if someone doesn't go to jail, it's just more like needing answers for why all of a sudden this happened, you know.
Thank you to Sharon McKell. And if you have any information about the murder of Emma Jade Pawelski, you can speak to Crime Stoppers anonymously on 1800 333 000. Thank you to our patrons Craig Anthony, Rachel Gormley, Susan Reed, Wendy Reynolds, Danielle Diner and her daughter Sally, Alison Visser, Mark Ofmalovia, Emily Chatfield, Christy Hole, Sky Doyle, Alice Mitchell, Kimmy, Grace Benson, and Nath McCauley. Thank you for downloading Australian True Crime, made in association with the Acast Creator Network. We'll be back next week.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Australian True Crime, the live show, is coming.